another podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting.
From the intersection of technology and public accounting,
it's technology advice and insight you can trust.
This is Tech2Go.
Tech2Go is the CPA Technology Advisor's monthly podcast program, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Greg LaFollette and regular columnist Brent Goodfellow, Dave McClure, and Randy Johnston. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession. Tech2Go is sponsored by ADP.
Hi, this is Greg LaFollette. We're recording episode 10, finally, we're into double digits, of Tech2Go for Intersection Live at the CPA Technology Advisor. I'm sitting high above the Las Vegas Strip at the Rio Hotel in a pretty darn nice room with my friend Randy Johnston, who's been here most of the week at various conferences. Hi, Randy.
Good day.
Good to have you here. Thanks for taking the time. I also have a special guest. We managed to snag one of the country's leading security experts here and get him to come to spend a little time. I've asked Dave Cieslak to come. David is a really interesting guy. He's chair of the AICPA iTech Committee. He chairs the top technology task force. Has done that for several years. Chaired the tech planning committee for several years. All of his hair fell out as a result of that. Very, very involved with the Cal Society. What's your background with the Cal Society, David?
I am currently serving on council and participate in the technology committee.
Okay. Well, you wear a lot of hats, and you were speaking over here earlier in the week with the accounting technology conference, and then back over to L.A. where you live, see if your house had burned down.
Correct.
Back here this morning to do another presentation.
Good news is it's still standing.
All right. Good for you. So anyway, I want to thank you a lot for being willing to come and spend some time with us. We also have a couple of our panelists dialing in today. Regular, longtime stalwart Brent Goodfellow. Brent, we are in the same time zone.
How about that?
Pretty amazing. Now, how's things in the Pacific Northwest today?
Well, this will probably surprise you. It's a little bit rainy today.
What a shock! That's the isn't it the weather report up there is if you can see Mount Hood, it's going to rain, and if you can't, it's already raining.
That's pretty much it. Yep.
Okay. Well, welcome. Thanks for joining us. We also have another guest. I've asked Darren Root to join us, and Darren is out in Indiana. I think, Darren, you're very, very involved in the Indiana Society, a CPA, a CITP. Just joined the CITP Credential Committee, and Darren and I had the opportunity to do a webcast several weeks ago, and he did just a fantastic job as we talked about practice management software, and I asked Darren if he could make time in his now early evening back in the East Coast, and he said he was willing to do that. So, Darren, welcome to Tech2Go.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm glad to have you here. So we've got a pretty full agenda, a bunch of things to visit about today, and before we get done, we'll talk about our next recording, which I probably should have done with my panelists before we went live, but we'll figure something out. As you our listeners know, we're not particularly formal, and they regularly tell us, at least have told me, that they're glad this is just audio and not video, because I have a face made for radio, I think is what the saying was. So last week or last month we talked about this new genre of software that we're beginning to see, the what I'm calling scan and organize, and kind of down the continuum to scan and populate. And we told you a couple of things as we talked about it last month. We kind of ran down the players and who was there. And since then, a couple things have happened that I think are interesting. Number one, Intuit made an interesting announcement. Randy, did you hear that announcement?
Yeah, I did hear about the pulling of source stock auto entry, which is a very interesting issue. But I do not know background as to why.
Well, I think the I think the background probably speaks for itself. At least, as I blogged about it, nobody at Intuit called and yelled at me, so I suspect it was fairly accurate. They didn't have stellar success last year. That's not a secret. There were many people. It certainly did not meet their standards. And whether or not it met user standards, it didn't in many cases. But I know it didn't meet Intuit standards. They were not happy. They looked at it, and they have determined that this is not a trivial problem to how to recognize all these tax, these different forms, and it's not trivial. It's very, very difficult. And so they simply said, for this year, we're pulling this product back. When we come back in the market, we're going to have a product that does meet our standards, that's as good as Lacerte, that's as good as QuickBooks, that's as good as the rest of our stuff, and we don't want to sell a product that we're not proud of, so we're not selling it. And my hat's off to them for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that takes lots of guts to do that.
Yeah, and I'm sure I would have loved to sit in there as you have the CFO over on one side and the marketing guys on one side and the development guys and the support guys and somebody sitting there engineering what we're going to do. And it's interesting to me that this happened not long after Joe Ward took responsibility for that division. And Sasan Ghazari was there, and he was an absolute accountant advocate, but Joe Ward is truly passionate about accountants and taking care of them. So, David, you're right in the middle of a hotbed of Lacerte users over there in Southern California. Do you hear anything about this at all? Any comments at all?
So far, not hearing a lot. So okay. I think everybody's kind of waiting for the pieces to get sorted out.
Sure. Brent, you or Darren have any thoughts on these guys deciding to pull this product back?
Well, I think it was the right move, but I suspect that the reason that Dave's not hearing a lot about it is I'm wondering how much interest there really was before they pulled it in the first place. I suspect it was probably a small user base, and there was no question that they needed to get the product right before they're competing against the likes of SurePrep and some of the other players,
Yeah. I think the next part of this that I think gets even more interesting is I happened to be sitting in a presentation the other day and that Randy Johnson was actually moderating, and these guys were talking about different things, and Jerry Connor from CCH was talking about their new product that they're going to introduce this year that they've talked about all year long. We're going to have a product to compete with SurePrep. We're going to have a scan and fill. In fact, that's what they've actually named their product over in the small firm services, but in the ProFX side, over in ProFX document, they're going to have a module that does scan and populate. And all of a sudden, this became a beta, limited release, pilot. And what I was hearing there is, the middle of the year, they went out and got EMC Captiva as a partner. And now they're kind of pulling back. What's that say to you, Randy?
Well, I think it really emphasizes the difficulty of doing this. Again, I'm a huge fan of this strategy because driving these mechanical tasks out of the CPA practice makes a devil a lot of sense.
Right.
And, again, I have started using the phrase, if you're a CPA, either in industry or public practice, and you're entering data, something's wrong. And so what's happening in this, on the tax side, personal tax side, we still have way too much data entry.
Right.
We've got a similar problem on the corporate tax side, too. But I think what happened is what looked like a simple problem at low volumes became a problem at high volumes. And, as many of the listeners have unfortunately already learned, too, the capture side from a hardware perspective, you're not going to use that office copier that's been sold to you as a possible scanner because the quality of the scan image just isn't good enough to do these type of operations. So you've really got to be worried about it from a hardware perspective, the production quality scanners that we've talked about on prior calls. And these publishers, I think, got a tiger by the tail, and at first it looked like a kitten. And, you know, I guess I am very pleased to see them throwing resources trying to solve the problem.
Right.
It must be a lot more difficult than it looks on the surface.
Well, it is an incredibly difficult problem. And, Randy, I want to tell you that I just got an email from some people that we happened to have dinner with last night that have, as I indicated last month, a new product. And the email says, you can feel free to go ahead and announce that there is a Boston-based company called Copanion that it will be launching in the next week or two a scan and organize product that is at least purported to be highly, highly accurate. As we listen to the way these guys have built this, it is, I mean, they got a team of PhDs and biometrics and a bunch of other, there was a lot of rocket science talk last night, Randy.
Yeah, I could tell you to tell. Of course, you know, your eyes were kind of rolling back when we went to that engineering geek speak.
Well, and you guys are way smarter than I am.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure that's true. We were just lucky to be in the right place at the right time. But I realized that the person behind the engineering, when I was listening to him explain the technologies that they were using, I said, sounds like voice recognition from the late 70s, and it turns out he had written some of his master's thesis on the same voice recognition stuff that I had researched at that same time frame. And I realized that the similarities between what they're doing with their character recognition is it's very sophisticated algorithms.
Right.
And I think I get a clue of the engineering. I actually can't wait to go talk to the engineers face to face.
Sure. Well, it's what's interesting to me is the people who are really moving ahead and really pushing this out there have said to me every single time I've talked to them, this is a really, really hard problem. And the people who have started down the road and then kind of gone, ooh, and had lots of changes and pullbacks and things, have looked at it up front and went, this is trivial, we can do this, and then have found out that it's not. So I'm thrilled, and I, you know, again, I think the profession owes a big thank you to Dave Weil for carving out this genre, and I think it's going to be pretty important.
Yeah, I think it is, and if the SurePrep numbers are correct, Dave reports from the firms that use their product anywhere from a 20 to 40 minute savings per tax return. So whether you're doing an administrative person or a practitioner doing that preparation work, that's a pretty big deal. Plus that ability to have the data entered into ProSystem FX, Lacert, or GoSystem RS out of that product, That's pretty impressive too. And the interface that they developed to handle this inaccuracy that still exists in OCR, it's actually pretty elegant to use too. So for a first, or in their case, maybe call it a second or third cut, they've made real good progress to try to keep it simple.
Sure.
So that I respect a good deal. In fact, I just love to watch software that's well thought out.
Yep.
And that one seems to be well thought out.
And Dave, you'll be real interested in looking at this stuff, because like the kind of the pay cycle and some of the other stuff, this is true. I hate to say this, but it is true Web 2.0 stuff. All webified, everything is there, and, you know, away you go. Buy them one, buy them two, software as a service stuff.
That's terrific. And I know that as we look at any of these kinds of applications, I think the industry ultimately is looking forward to anything that will help change the way they work.
Right. And, Darren, I know you happen to be an UltraTax shop. Is that right?
We are.
Okay, and Thompson, as we said last week, or last month, Thompson has indicated that they will have a limited release, and that's very typical for them. They've always done slow, controlled releases and make sure everything works before they get it out there. So they're going to have a slow, controlled release. You're gonna sign up and be a part of that, Darren?
You know, I'm usually a pretty early adopter on some things like that, but I'm just going to ask a question out of ignorance. What's the reliability on this stuff that you guys have seen out there? I mean, when it's scanned, I mean, how reliable, the accuracy rate, do you have any idea for that?
I want to toss that over to Brent because he's the only one in the whole group that that's actually trying to make a living, you know, in an environment where that matters directly. Brent, you looked at it and put it away, right?
Yeah, we did. The SurePrep product has probably the most promise. I think I heard Randy say that as well. We spent 2 years using the CCH product, pretty disappointed in that particular product in terms of, that was not scan and populate, that was scan and organize. But even scan and organize, you know, we were pretty disappointed with the underlying technology associated with that product.
And they have announced now over the last couple of months that they've spent a lot of dollars. I haven't seen this yet, but that's gonna run as a service this year, not as an application. So they've done some of those things that, you know, arguably maybe should have been done before, but, you know, they've only had the product a short period of time. So
yeah, and as often is the case with CCH, it takes a while for them to put the quality of their engineering in the products they acquire.
Right.
So I understand that evolution. You know, I was actually trying to recall directly, so don't take these as gospel, but I know the SurePrep folks claim that they've got 90%+, high 97 type of percent recognition, and they've got a mechanism where if there's a doubt, they basically ask you. So I think by the time you go through their process, I think it's a pretty sure, entry mechanism. It's a pretty sure sign-off. So they really will look and say, oh, a 5 and a 6 are similar. We're not sure about this. Here's our best guess, but you get to approve it. So their approval process, I think, makes them exceptionally accurate. And frankly, the intelligence in the product is still fascinating to me, specifically picking on brokerage statements. They have enough intelligence about the different brokerage statements in the market that they can actually pick off the proper cost basis. So, you know, a lot of practitioners don't know how to do that properly, particularly our juniors and our newbies.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in many cases, I think the software might have better skill sets on some of those specialized things than low-level newbies.
Believe me, and I've employed a lot of junior accountants in my 30 years in public accounting. If you could tell me I was going to get 97% accuracy, I'd hire them every time because you don't get that. That's pretty good stuff. And Darren, you haven't looked at any of this yet, right?
Well, you know, I saw when I was in Vegas this summer, I saw Dave Weil was there and looked at it a little bit. Brent, are you guys going to try it again soon, or are you holding off for a little bit?
No, we have the CCH product this year. We didn't have to pay for it. I think that was a result of our experience, and so we're gonna take another look at that. But we've done some testing with the SurePrep product, and we'll continue to do that. And not sure exactly what the answer is going to be for this tax season, but it'll be one of those two products.
Well, let's finish up. I only want to spend a couple of minutes on scan and populate, scan and organize, and we went over and got it. As you can tell, we're all excited about this, but I want to move on to our next subject, and this is a subject that I think is going to take us months and months and months to talk through. So I want to talk a little bit about what's going to be happening here probably, well, actually during tax season. We're going to see Windows Server 2008 get released, and firms are going to have to know what's happening, and certainly we're going to say, don't touch this thing until, you know, much later on. But I want to ask Brent to, you know, you're right up next door to Redmond, and I want to ask you to give us a little background on Windows Server 2008 and kind of maybe talk to us a little bit about how we might chop this up in subtopics so that in future editions of Tech2Go we can kind of get this a little bit more in bite-sized morsels to talk about so that by next summer, when firms are in a position to start thinking about, gee, is this something I need or want to do, they'll at least have some background. So what's the big deal with Windows Server 2008?
Well, Microsoft has kind of followed the same routine that they have for several years. You know, they release the desktop operating system, and then they follow that up, you know, a year or so after that with the equivalent of the server operating system. So we got XP, and then a year after that we got Windows Server 2003, which was the equivalent of XP on the server side, if you want to think of it that way. Early this year, we got Vista on the desktop, and true to form, approximately a year after that, it's going to be February of 2008, we're going to get the server edition of Vista, which is called Windows Server 2008. And it's almost every 5 years, we get a new operating system. They have taken the technology in Windows Server 2003, and they've added to it, and they've expanded it. There's lots of new things in Windows Server 2008, as well as just some improvements over some of the existing technologies. So I just want to mention a couple of the highlights that I think might be interesting to CPA firms. As far as timing goes, anyone that's using Small Business Server, and I know there's lots of small firms that do use Small Business Server, the Server 08 version of Small Business Server won't be out until late 2008, and that's assuming that they make that release date. It may even be 2009 before they get to the Small Business Server version of Windows Server 2008. I suspect that one of the main things to keep in mind with Server 2008 is it does support 32-bit hardware. I suspect that this is going to be the last server operating system from Microsoft that's going to support 32-bit hardware, and a number of the functionality improvements in Server 2008 actually require 64-bit hardware. But
you can go either way, right? 32 or 64.
Yes, you absolutely can.
Okay.
Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Some of the terminal server improvements on the client side require a 64-bit terminal server on the server side. So you can still load Windows Server 08 terminal services on 32-bit hardware, but there is a limitation on the virtual address space. So you get a limit of 4 gigs virtual address space if you're using 32-bit hardware. If you go to 64-bit hardware, you get 8 terabytes of virtual address space. And so to provide the enhancements on the client side in a terminal server session, you need that extra virtual address space. So here's what I'm talking about on the client side. Now you can have multiple monitors on the client side, for example. You can get a maximum display of 4096 by 2048, and that's total for both monitors. So there's been a lot of accountants who have said, I use terminal services, when am I going to be able to use multiple monitors? Well, with Server 08, now it's technically possible to do that. The device redirection has been improved significantly in Server 08.
Wait a minute. What is device redirection?
Device redirection is the ability to connect to a terminal server from a remote location, open an application, and then print something from that application, but print it to the printer at the remote location.
Okay. Thanks.
So I'm redirecting that print job to my local device. So some of the devices that have been added in terms of device redirection are such things as media players. So now I can take this must have come from the Zune team, I guess, at Microsoft, I don't know. But the idea is that now I can take my Zune or my iPod, I can plug it into my remote machine and sync it up with a music library on a remote server. And I can do the same thing with a digital camera. So I can plug my digital camera in my remote machine, and I can sync the digital pictures on that camera now with my network through the terminal server.
And that means I don't need a sling box anymore, right?
That's exactly right.
Okay. Well, we're gonna talk about TiVos and DVRs and things in a little bit. So we're gonna come back to that. That's pretty cool stuff. So what else is in this thing?
On the terminal server side, I think this is going to be very interesting to accountants, especially those who have used Citrix or are considering using Citrix. In Server 08 terminal services, there is a technology called TS Remote Apps. And essentially what that is, it's very similar to what Citrix has done with their seamless Windows product for years and years. You're going to be able to publish individual applications to a web interface, and instead of actually requiring a logon to a terminal server where you get a terminal server desktop and run the applications from there, now you can execute individual applications from a web interface and run just the application. It's very similar to application virtualization, but it's running applications through a terminal services environment.
That means that I should go short on Citrix stock?
That's probably a good idea, although, you know, Citrix has always taken the basic terminal server technologies built into Microsoft products and enhanced them, and I think they're probably still going to continue to do that. But this is kind of a major piece because, at least in the accounting industry, one of the things that accounting firms like about Citrix is the ability to have their remote workers or perhaps small branch office workers hit a website and run those applications through the Citrix server. And that functionality is going to be possible now with Windows Server 2008 terminal services.
Okay. So for practicing accountants out there, this is something that we should start thinking about and looking at and understanding, so when the decision comes, decision time, we'll know a little bit more about it, and we'll spend more time going back and look at these individual topics, you know, like some of them that you have mentioned, because I think they have huge applicability, to practice right now. Well, David, you work a lot over, you know, with a lot of small business clients. Is Windows Server 2008 something that you're going to be looking at with your customers soon? Or?
Well, definitely. I think as you look at these products, not only for some of the things that we've just kind of read down is some of the neat new features, but clearly the 64-bit, the speed, the stability, just really how that really kind of opens up the potential of some of the things that you can do with the OS. Already we've got a number of clients that have been really looking at it and saying as soon as the 64-bit versions of some of these products are available, they really want to give a hard look at that. I know that a number of clients have already gone with 64-bit versions of the Windows Server OS today just to take advantage of some of the new stuff in Exchange, the 64-bit version of Exchange.
Sure.
So again, I appreciate that there's a lot of neat stuff coming. And there's a lot of neat potential there, and actually, as you were Brent, as you were talking about the kind of using that the publishing the application as it were at the application level and kind of likening that to Citrix. I was looking over at Randy here, and I for the life of me, I'm trying to remember who the technology may have been purchased from on Microsoft's part, but. Just the whole notion of being able to encapsulate applications and using that as a delivery mechanism, clearly that is something that I think is going to be very attractive to a number of customers as a way to really kind of just deliver the applications over the web and really make that a more seamless process and a more seamless approach. So I'm very excited about that, and I know our clients are already asking about that too.
Okay. Well, it's interesting to try and cover something like Windows Server 2008 in 11 minutes, but probably takes a little bit longer than that. Darren, Randy, you got anything you want to throw into there before we move on?
Well, we've talked virtualization multiple times.
Yes.
And we don't want to forget virtualization in this case. And there's a couple of three things to remember about the Windows 2008 release. One, to get virtualization from Microsoft, you're going to have to run on the 64-bit platform. And number two, Microsoft's already stated they won't release the virtualization capability for at least 180 days after initial release. So that immediately puts us into August from the February 27th release date. There's a lot of innovative technologies that are going to happen inside this platform, things that are similar to like we have seen in Vista. And at this point, from a strategy perspective, I suspect we'll find that even though we can run 32-bit, we're going to be forced more into 64-bit, just like Dave's example on Exchange. And even for our listeners with their normal Vista today, we've actually done the cutover in our core recommendation. We've actually stopped recommending Vista 32 and started recommending Vista 64 on everything. And there's lots of reasons for that, sure, which will be a good topic for maybe next time.
Right. Well, you know, we can certainly throw that in there because we just keep making everything bigger and bigger. And, you know, you got 4 gigabyte of RAM and laptops and all sorts of crazy things.
It's the American way.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. You got, it's the Wintel engine, isn't it? So,
hey,
and Darren, you're Greg? Sitting there with SBS 2003 running your joint, right?
Yeah, and I'm sitting here wanting to ask Brent a question. So if I'm sitting here with SBS 2003, and I'm at the point, you know, I could really stand to replace my server in the next 9 months. Do I go ahead and replace it and put SBS 2003 on again, and then kind of wait for 2008 SBS to come out and then to actually get a little bit more mature? So maybe another 3-year cycle after that, or what's your recommendation?
Well, I would probably say if your hardware is due, you could certainly replace your hardware now and put the SBS 2003 back on it, wait for the SBS version of 2008, and then do an in-place upgrade. That's not a bad strategy. Otherwise, you know, if you think your hardware can make it another 9 to 12 months, I would probably do without the intrusion of having to replace the hardware and then do an in-place upgrade 9 months from now. So I think probably the best option is to limp along with what you have and then do the hardware and software upgrade at the same time.
You guys probably can't hear all the heads rattling here, nodding. Yes, you're right, but there were lots of them. So, let's kind of leave this thing and move on. We've got a couple of other things that I want to make sure we talk about. First, I want to make sure that we again thank our friends at ADP for sponsoring Tech2Go. We appreciate their help and their support. And I guess it's kind of an interesting thing here is I have something I wanted to share with the group, and I think I'd share this whether ADP happened to be a sponsor or not, but in as much as they are a sponsor, it makes me feel good that I've got something to share that's really, really great with them. These guys have just introduced this week a new system they call ADP Run, R-U-N, Run. And this online system is one of these dashboard kinds of things. I hear Randy talking about it. I hear David and Brent talking about it all the time. We did a webcast not long ago, and Darren was talking about it, but here they've got a dashboard approach where an accountant can sign on, single sign-on, and look at all of their clients at one time. So we're now, again, moving up a little bit on the Web 2.0 kind of stuff, deal with all of their clients, whether it's basic or direct deposit or tax filing, the whole thing. They can do it if they choose. They can set up a branded homepage. So it's ADP making their customer, who is in this case the accountant, look smart in the eyes of their client. And when you can do that, you'll make a friend for life. So I think that's a really, really smart thing. Plus, it's got all of the things that you would expect, the tie-in to Microsoft Office Accounting and QuickBooks and all of that stuff. But, you know, these guys, there's a lot of firms out there moving back into the payroll business. I heard this question. In fact, in the session that you moderated yesterday, this question came up again about payroll and and accountants are getting back in the payroll business, and ADP is looking at that and going, you know what, that's fine. We'll partner with you. It's a very different ADP than it was even 2 or 3 years ago. These guys have really come a long way. They got great stuff, and I want to thank them for sponsoring us and encourage you to, if you're in that market, go take a look at it, and if you happen to buy it, tell them it was because we talked about it. If you've already bought it, call them up and tell them it was because we talked about it anyway. We want to make sure we can keep doing this because it's fun for us. So that's one announcement, and then I have a second announcement. I'm very, very happy to again, we talked about it last time. We've launched another podcast called Small Business Consulting to Go that we did episode one just recently. We're doing episode two. This features Doug Sleater. We're here at the Sleater Conference, and Doug and I will be doing that live Monday morning, the 29th, on TalkShoe, 11:30 Eastern Daylight. I fooled Doug. He didn't figure out till just today that's 8:30 in the morning for him. But anyway, that's when we're doing it. We're talking specifically about all of those issues about small business consulting. So we're talking a lot about QuickBooks, about Peachtree, about Microsoft Office accounting, how to make money in that thing. And they don't get any better than Doug Sleater in this. So this is a fun one. And if that's not enough, I have yet another fun one to announce. My good friend here, Dave Sislek, has graciously agreed to do another monthly recurring scheduled podcast. We'll be launching that soon. I'll give you the dates. It's Accounting Firm Security to Go. David is a security expert. Tell me about your certification, David. What is that?
Well, there's actually a number of different security certifications out there. I had evaluated several of them, and I chose to go with one through an organization called SANS, S-A-N-S, and you can find out more about them at sanssans.org. And they have a number of different certifications, and the process that I went through involved sitting through a six-day boot camp, and from there had to go ahead and write a white paper, and then sit for two exams after that. So okay. It was kind of like going back to the CPA exam all over again. It reminded me. It was actually kind of one of those, you got that feeling in the pit of your stomach. It's like, I've been here before, I've done this before. But the net result of all that is I got what is called my GSEC, my GIAC, Security Essentials Certification. And really the whole focus of that is just making sure you have the ins and outs of security. And they have a number of other specialized certifications in their mix as well. But basically I'm a generalist.
Okay. Well, we're going to take all of that stuff that sounds really, really techy, things like digital certificates and firewalls and all of those things. We're gonna drill it down to small firm practicing public accountants and talk about what you can do, should do, have to do, might not be doing, all of those things. And I promise you we'll get these in bite-sized chunks. And the one of the reasons that I asked David, and I admire him very, very much, is he has a unique ability to explain highly complex technical things in language that I can understand. And so if I can understand it, certainly you can understand it, and we can all be a little bit safer, and we can learn to, what'd you call that practice, safe computing?
Yeah. My metaphor was actually a little more colorful than that. But we'll go ahead and move
okay.
on here.
Well, it wasn't a public room. So our next topic is yet another errata topic. Something we talked about just a month or last month. We talked about this Microsoft Home Server. Since that time, the Microsoft Home Server software the OEM software is out there. It's on my wish list on Newegg, ready to buy, and I think I'm going to buy it here one of these days and convert an old machine that I got and make it, you know, see how that works. HP decided not to sell their product quite yet, but I expect it any day. Anybody think, again, you know, we talked about this a little bit, are small firms going to start looking at this? We talk now about Office or about this Server 2008. That sounds like a spaceship to me. For a small firm with, you know, three or four people, might this $600, $700, $800 thing be pretty cool?
Well, it might be. And in fact, the HP positioning on that was they got the home server product from Microsoft, and it wasn't quite ready for prime time
right. And
several different things. So they said, we'll do some additional engineering here, and Microsoft will feed some of that engineering back to you. So I really expect kind of a service pack one, if you would want to think of it that way, which Microsoft would not want you to think of it that way.
Right.
But they'll actually have some pretty good upgrades. And the thing on this box is, if you're just a few users, a two or a three or so forth, this actually could be an okay way to get backup done and to have shared files. And, you know, for some people, they really don't have a server-centric environment where they actually have to run server-based applications.
Right.
So they don't need SQL Server, and they don't need Exchange Server, and they don't really want those things. And what they've been doing, of course, is using network-attached storage and just sharing network-attached storage, or a much worse scenario, which is more common, they have a desktop machine typically running Windows XP. They park in the corner and share the files. So if that's what you're doing today, it's clear that home server is a possible solution for this because it's smart enough to do the backups. It's smart enough to copy on the drives. It's smart enough to copy offsite with an additional fee.
Sure.
It has some sharing capabilities. So it could be a more intelligent network-attached storage device.
Right. Well, I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that was out there. Anybody got any input they want to share on this home server?
Well, I had a chance to take a look at the home server product as a part of CES this last year, and I was very excited to actually, you know, see it, you know, on the machines, get a chance to touch it. I think it has some terrific potential, and it was one of those things where, you know, years ago I think we were all saying to ourselves when we found ourselves in situations where we had more than one machine at home, saying, you know what, wouldn't it be great if we could bring some level of, you know, better manageability, you know, to the house. And I think the other thing that I'm seeing more and more of, and I know, Randy, you see this, I think anyone really is kind of moving this direction, we're now seeing people with terabytes of storage on their home networks, and it could be, you know, I think so many of us. And so we look at that and we say, and look at what we're storing. We're storing now years worth of digital photos and stuff that honestly is irreplaceable. And I don't know if you guys have gotten these phone calls. I've gotten these phone calls where we're getting people saying, oh my goodness, I've had a disk crash on the machine in my house that stored all that, you know, irreplaceable information. Please tell me I can get it back. And so again, we look at it and say, boy, if anything, not only has the time come, the time is actually a little past due for this product. And I'm hoping that they really do get the kinks worked out and that really it does reach some critical mass in short order. I still unfortunately think it's going to be a bit, but it's clearly a product whose time has clearly come.
Yep. And Brent, you built one, right?
Yeah, I built one with the beta bits, and just to follow on with what Randy said, the reason that HP made the decision to pull back, it's not that the original product wasn't ready, it's just that they added some additional, Microsoft added some additional functionality, and HP was afraid that if they told their customers that there was this additional functionality, call it a service pack or call it whatever you want to, that somehow it would hurt them, it would hurt their image of releasing too early. And so they just decided to wait for the additional functionality and then release their product at that time.
Darren, maybe you can put this on your Christmas list now, because I think it also had something to do with when Christmas was coming. You going to put this on your Christmas list, get your bride to buy one for you?
Well, you know, I'd have to make a major shift, because right now I send all my money at home to Apple.
Okay.
This
is a great segue. This is a great segue right here, because our next topic is actually – you know, we have to torture this a little bit to make it accounting related, but it is, because we all have home lives, and right now we may be, well, I guess I don't, but you know, a lot of us are trying to figure out how to get all those years worth of pictures that David talked about back upstairs into your big screen, and how you do all that. So I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about the whole TiVo DVR TV extender thing. And as you say, Apple, I went, boy, am I really glad I didn't buy that ITV, because didn't that make a great big in the market? Didn't do anything. Did you buy one of those, Darren?
You know, I didn't. I transferred mine through Bose. Bose has what's called Bose Link, and
uh-huh.
You can transfer stuff around the house wirelessly using that. And we even pump it outside. It's kind of a neat feature, and hooks into all of my Apple machines.
So, do you have in your home, in your home theater or whatever, do you have a DVR, a TiVo, a media center? Where
are you at? Right now for the TV, we're using the DVR, but we end up, we used to use the TiVo, and then it was just a lot easier to use. We have Insight Cable around here, which was recently bought by one of the larger cable companies, and so we just have their DVR box.
Uh-huh.
And that's pretty simple to use. It's kind of just put a time in there and a show and push, and you're ready to go.
Well, I have a TiVo that I don't have it anymore, because I finally traded it in a really great deal. But I had I think my serial number for my TiVo was something like 12. I've had it forever, and I love my TiVo. I now have a Series 2, and I just ordered another one, a Series 3. And when I compare that, which I have in one room, to the DVR that I have in another room, I very quickly get to the point where I want to throw rocks at my DVR. I think it's horrible, and my TiVo is way better. But I finally got, now with an Xbox 360, Dave and Randy both tell me this works. I went out and bought an Xbox 360, put it in, use it with my Windows Media Center, and now all of a sudden I have everything in my house on my TV. David, you've been doing this for years. Yours is like the Starship Enterprise at your house.
Yeah, I was one of those early adopters. I went back. I actually signed on when Gateway was kind of selling the nice all integrated package, the Windows,
right.
The Windows XP Media Center with a 42-inch plasma, and then to the side of that, I've got a monitor, a smaller monitor, and a mouse, so the kids can use it as a desktop computer when we're not using it as a part of our home entertainment system. And so I recently took that box, added some more storage, added some more RAM, and put Windows Vista Home Premium on there. And that has actually been just terrific. That's actually been a really good experience. Mm-hmm. But again, I've got every single CD I own, every single digital photo we've ever taken. I'm recording TV all the time. When I'm getting ready to hit the road, I copy that to my selected shows to my laptop. So I really look at all of that and just say, boy, it's really neat to be able to kind of just grab and go with a lot of this technology now.
Now, would you say that you rip DVDs or not?
I'm going to have to take the fifth on that one.
I'll say the same thing, except I'm looking at my desktop and I see this thing called AVEX DVD Ripper. I don't know how it got on there or what we use it for. Randy, you do a lot of this. You make it simple in your house. How do you do it?
Yeah, ours is all integrated together as well. But I have the good fortune of having two college-age sons, which are my research assistants in this area. So, yes, we have an original Xbox. Yes, we have an Xbox 360. Yes, we have a PlayStation 3 running Yellow Dog Linux. Yes, we have... Wii, and we got one of the first one of those and so forth. So we have all of the game consoles, which are also integrated across the network, which is clearly helpful. And each of those three game consoles actually have their perspective, and each of them deliver reasonably good video signals. Blu-ray in the case of PlayStation is exceptionally good, and I'm still a big Blu-ray fan. In fact, my current laptop is a Blu-ray laptop.
Sure.
And there's a noticeable difference in picture quality and so forth. And because of my research assistants, we had to visit the E for All show at the LA Convention Center this past week, where we also got to look at some of the portable technology that's now mounted in trucks to allow us to take these big consoles out to the beach or the party or wherever. Everything's self-contained, so we know this is going to become a mobile road show from the world. Not to mention, as I often follow the whole gaming industry, this media experience that we're getting right now in TV is coming from the gamer's realm in many cases, including a stand-in IMAX experience. So I think our TV viewing will get even better than the current flat panels based on what I've seen.
I'm very concerned about owning a TV that's so large. I have to stop at the weigh stations if I'm moving. That concerns me.
Well, it's really okay, and I got to tell you some of the – just one final other piece. Again, we had looked at the home server software at the game show here in the last couple of days, and again, it's coming along fine, but was also duly impressed with some of the game computers, particularly the new HP Blackbird. The finest bit of computer engineering I've seen in 10 years, maybe 15 years.
Wow.
And it was obvious it was built to surpass anything that Alienware could build.
Sure.
And the engineers had the guideline to say, money is no object, build the best.
Sure.
It was duly impressive. And what that tells me is that technology is going to come into our business, too.
Mm-hmm.
The graphics resolution in that computer, the speed at which it worked, there's some interesting things. And actually, watching a Blu-ray movie on that box was perfectly fine.
You know, on the flip side of the bigger is better, sitting right over here is an iPod Touch. And I watched a movie the other day or last week flying out to the West Coast, and I forgot within about 3 minutes that I was watching it on a 4-inch screen. Your mind just kind of adjusts, or at least it did for me, and it was a wholly satisfactory experience.
Well, you know, I think on the Sunday night keynote I did here in Vegas, I used the MyViews, which are those wearable glasses,
mm-hmm.
and you know, they, depending on which glasses you get, it's a 42 or a 60-inch TV experience. The only bad side is you look a little bit like Data from Star Trek, but beyond
yeah.
that. It's a gorgeous picture, so there's lots of options that we have here, and
right.
I continue to be
right.
pleased with where we're headed.
So, Brent, this server thing that we were talking about before over in Windows Server 2008 and some stuff, that has real implications for entertainment, home theater. I mean, I could have a monitor in my office and watch something that's on my home computer do a tax return on the other monitor. Is that going to happen?
Well, you can do that now. You don't need Windows Server 2008.
That's
that.
True. You can.
Mm-hmm.
You can.
So to tie this all into true accounting, we just
right.
need to watch our CPE on these things.
Right? Exactly. Exactly. We're going to have to stretch this. Well, this is not a CPE a podcast, so that part we don't have to worry mm-hmm. about. We'll take it back. We're going to end with something that is, in fact, true accounting. One of the hats that David Cieslak wears is as chair of the Top Techs Initiative Task Force. Did I say that all right?
That's awesome.
Bring us up to speed a little bit, where we're at. Give me a little history lesson, and we'll see how well the rest of us understand what you've been doing.
Okay. The top technologies, the project or the effort has been called several different things over the years. Early on, it was an invitation-only kind of event where they asked a number of visionaries to kind of get together, put their brains together, and really kind of look in their collective crystal balls and give some sense to the rest of the accounting community where they thought kind of the up-and-coming technology was, where they thought technology was going to take the practitioner in the years to come. And I think what happens is you know, that effort, it took a lot to get those folks together, both physically and as well as financially. And they looked at it and said, you know, is there a way that we can really get a broader perspective, pull more people into the mix? And so what happens is this this whole effort has kind of evolved from, rather than just the opinions or the thoughts of a handful of folks, what they've done is, or what we've done is really kind of said, let's pull together a survey and then share it back with a much larger audience. So right now we are, in fact, just now getting ready to publish the survey, and that's going to, so you'll be getting email invites if you're a member of any one of a number of different communities, the AICPA IT member section, a member of ISACA, a member of the IIA, a member of the ITA. You will be getting an email invite here within about the next week or two at the most. And, in fact, we've walked through the survey several times here up on the website already, so we've had a chance to take it around the block. We know that it works and works looks pretty darn good, and it's ready to go. And so there's some 29 different technology initiatives that people are going to be able to kind of think about and say, you know what, that is probably where I'm going to be focusing my time, my energy, my dollars in the next 12 to 18 month time frame. And interestingly enough, too, this is something where we've talked about technologies, we've talked about issues, we've talked about emerging technologies, and really what the committee did is said, you know what, it would probably be best to frame each one of these things as initiatives. In other words, what is it that people are intending to focus their resources on? And let's look at that in a 12 to 18 month time frame. Let's get the sense from a very large audience. So we're hoping and fully planning to have several thousand people respond to this survey, give us their thoughts, and really kind of weigh in on what they think are going to be the technology initiatives that they plan to focus their energy on in the 12 to 18 month time frame. So we're actually excited, and the list will be coming out officially once the voting's all in, the tabulation's been done. The list will actually be coming out in the December-ish time frame, so we will know what the top 10 technology initiatives are for 2008 come mid-December. So we'll be looking forward to the actual list coming out.
Now, Darren, out in Indiana, you guys use that list as a part of your state society technology training things, if I recall?
I think we do.
Okay.
I think we do.
Okay. So we'll be, and we can count on you to vote, I'm sure, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Brent, do you make use of this list? You pay any attention to it, or?
Yeah, absolutely. I am very interested in how it comes out every year. Don't always agree 100% with the way it comes out, but it's a survey, right?
Well, I don't even agree with myself 100%. That's a Fred Thompson line which I thought was pretty interesting. Well, guys, we are at 57 minutes. And we want to be respectful of everybody's time. We try to say we're going to keep this to an hour, and I hate to have meetings or conversations go on after they're ended, and I think this one is probably about at this point. So let me wrap up with a couple of things. Again, thanks to our friends at ADP. These are good guys, good products, and we certainly appreciate their supporting us. And I think it's kind of interesting to see these few companies that are willing to step up and help us do a bunch of podcasts and reach out to, you know, to all of you in the way that we do them. So thanks to those guys. Our next recording of Tech2Go will be Tuesday, November 20th. I've convinced Randy Johnson, who will be suffering over a hot beach in Honolulu, to get up at 6 a.m., which means my West Coast compatriot here, Brent Goodfellow, will have to get up at 8 a.m. I can go have breakfast and be in the office at 10, and Dave McClure, our other regular panelist out in the East Coast, will be here at 11. But anyway, that's the time frame, and you'll see that on our website. You'll also see it on TalkShoe. Small Business to Go, scheduled 10:29. That's next Monday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And our inaugural edition of Accounting Firm Security to Go, scheduled on the 21st of November. That's a Wednesday. That's a day before Thanksgiving, right? And we'll do that at noon Eastern Standard Time. Any thoughts about what we'll talk about, David? There'll be something pretty darn exciting by that time coming up.
Oh, I got to tell you, it's a huge pile to choose from. So
right.
I think what we'll try to do is just jump in and make sure we've just got some good solid fundamentals to get going with.
Right. Well, remember, if you go to our website, there is a number. Feel free to call in, leave us a note. We'd love to have your questions and your input and deal with those. So I want to thank Dave Cieslak specifically. Dave, thanks very much for being willing to come up and spend some time. I know I kind of drug you off the show floor there and said, you know, please come and do this, and you were very kind to do that, and I appreciate it.
Glad to be a part. Thank you.
Super. And Randy, you've just been a wonderful trooper through this whole thing. You had so very much to this and the stuff that you do for the magazine, the stuff that you do through the K2 organization. You've moved the profession probably farther technologically than certainly any one person I can think of, and I enjoy every single time I get to work with you. Thanks very much for being here.
Very pleased to do that. And again, our biggest concern is you, the end user. Yeah, again, if you'll send us those questions, we'd really prefer to talk about and try to solve the problems that you have. I know that'd be true for Doug. I know that's true for Dave. So again, let us help you, and we appreciate your time.
Super. And Brent Goodfellow up in Oregon. Brent, what's the name of you've got a separate organization within the accounting firm up there that serves small business clients. What's that called?
OneTech,
okay. And you guys serve a bunch of clients up in the Portland area and also work with accounting firms all across the country. I know I run into people in Florida and New York and all over, and I say, you know, how are you doing your technology? What's going on? And they say, well, you know, we work with Brent Goodfellow. And I go, well, he's in, you know, and then you realize very quickly this is a virtual world. It doesn't matter where you are. So thanks very much for spending all the time that you do trying to keep the Microsoft stuff straight for all of us and keep us appraised of what's going on and what's important and what's not so important. I appreciate your time and your input.
Glad to participate.
And Darren, thanks very much for participating. I know you took some time out from supper with the family out on the East Coast. Thanks so much for stepping in, and we look forward to some future opportunities to do even more things. I know you're busy doing a review for us right now for the CPA Technology Advisor, so everybody can look forward to that. What's your review on?
High-end accounting software. That's what I spent my afternoon doing today. So this was...
Right. Well, I'm sure it's going to take a lot more than just an afternoon, but I certainly appreciate your efforts there. And as I said at the beginning, you're a new member of the CITP Credential Committee, so I look forward to working with you on that. And thanks again for joining us today.
Well, my pleasure. So, thanks for letting me.
That's it, guys. We are done. We are just at one hour and a couple of minutes. Thank you very much to everybody. And this is episode 10 of Tech2Go. We're done. We'll see you next month. Thank you very much. Bye.
That wraps up this edition of Tech2Go. Join the team around the table again next month for more technology advice and insight you can trust. This has been a podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting.